You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Your Ultimate Life. This is the place where we create life, one idea, one thought at a time. And I use this background of a martial arts dojo on purpose because I've spent, I don't know how many thousand hours in one like this or many like this. And there's a lot of work, but there are big goals. Today, I've got a special guest for you, Robert Twine, who's a fellow that I've known for a while, and I'm grateful to have him here with us to talk about the ways that Robert adds good to the world. And I'm excited because there are lots of stories that I've heard from him. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Thank you.
You are welcome. Glad to have you. So I'm going to ask my trick question right up front. Robert, I'd like you to tell the audience, how does Robert add good to the world?
I love that. Such a great question. So every day, every morning, I have a routine. That's the way that I start to add good to the world is adding good to myself. So I get up in the morning, I'd have a routine, typically an hour or 2 hours. I meditate for 30 minutes to an hour. Then I do some reading. I get myself prepared. I take a shower. I read out some empowering words, statements into the world. And then, I step out and whatever comes whenever my kids get up, I serve them, love them to the best of my ability. Also, I'm a coach. So I work with small business teams and individuals to help them grow and create what they want in their life. And then I also play music in nursing homes, which is really, really fun. I do that about anywhere between six to 10 times a month, which is I almost gave it up and I'm so glad I didn't because it's one of the things that I love the most about what I do to add good to the world.
So, you know, one of the things that you talked about, the very first is a morning routine to add good to yourself and to prepare yourself. You use the word preparation and, you know, you listed a couple of things which are focused on your spirit and your body and that sort of stuff. And everybody's heard of, you know, the 5 a.m. miracle and that kind of thing. What is there that's powerful? Like most people talk about morning rituals. Oh, if I have time, I'll try to do this. Yeah, I'm supposed to. And, you know, they don't really do it. What is it that makes yours different, that makes it something that you do all the time instead of skipping?
That's another great question. And I would say for about 30 years, I had people suggesting. I went to 12-step meetings starting when I was about 17 years old. And they're one of the things that they talk about is meditation. And I had people saying, hey, have you tried meditation? When I was 17, and I'm like, what do I look like, a monk? I'm not going to meditate. Are you silly? Like, what am I going to do? Sit around and go, om, om, om. I was like, I'm not trying that crap. So I didn't do it. And people kept suggesting, hey, why don't you try this? And I was like, no, contempt prior to investigation, right? That's not for me. I'm not going to do that. So for 20 years, I said, no, I wouldn't try it. I wouldn't try it. And finally, my life got so miserable. I created so much havoc and chaos in my life that finally, like, all right, what do you want me to do? There's like, how about you try meditating? Okay, I'll try it. I'll do anything to get away from this terrible, terrible feeling that I created in my life with all the chaos. So I tried it. And guess what happened? It worked. It helped me to feel very peaceful. It helped me to feel very centered. It helped me to clear my mind. It helped to take away cravings that I had for drugs. It really helped me to get to a place where I felt peaceful, which I was always looking for. And it helped me to be very okay with myself when I did it. And then why do I do it every day now? Is because when I don't do it, I feel I go back to that crazy self where I don't know what's wrong. It's like, what's wrong? I can't figure it out. Well, you stop meditating. Maybe that's part of it. So that's why I do it, because it works.
So people to say, one of the things that people say when they start meditating is, I don't think I can do it right. I don't know if it works for me. And they use those words. Like, what does it mean when you say it works? What does work mean in the context of that particular practice?
It connects me with the ability to react versus or respond versus react. So it allows me to be and show up and be who I want to be. It's almost like back in the day I did drugs because it let me access my state of being where I could be whatever I wanted to be. And the only other thing that I found to help me access my state of being so I could show up and be who I wanted to be is meditation, getting all those thoughts. You know, I talked to a Buddhist monk and his practice was Nichiren Ren Buddhism. And he said he likened meditation to a mental bowel movement. It's where you're getting all that stuff that's in the way, all those thoughts that are in the way out. You're getting them out of your head. You're just clearing your mind and allowing yourself to get back to square one where you can show up and choose what thought you want to lead with.
So I love that. Thank you. Because, you know, one of the things I say to people is meditation is you're learning a skill, and the skill is to learn to direct your thinking as opposed to having it be sort of this chaotic mess that directs you. So that's fantastic. Let's move on through some other stuff that you talked about. You talked about showing up for your kids and taking care of them, serving them. Like some people get up and barely get the kids out the door, out to school, et cetera, et cetera. What is the difference between how you serve those very first people that you meet? And what does that mean to serve them?
So it means I show up peaceful. I show up honest. I show up. And please understand that I make choices that are not the most loving, and I get to clean that up. So I show up and I be as loving as possible. There's no have to's or musts. I get rid of the have to's and musts. Sometimes we're late for school. That's okay. We don't need to be on time. It's one of those things. We get to, if last night was a rough night, my daughter was up every hour on the hour with a sore gum on the side, and she was waking up. She had a little night terror. She's 5. And, you know, it was okay. I let her sleep in this morning and we went to school late. Sometimes the school doesn't like that, and that's okay. I'm doing them a favor by so showing up and being present and being open and doing that to the best of my ability in this moment. And when I don't do that, forgiving myself and recommitting to doing that again.
There's a phrase that comes to my mind when you describe that, being okay with what is, not worrying too much about what the school thinks and by extension, anybody or anything else. And the phrase is surrender, which I equate with trust. So talk about how having a stance, which is, comes from your meditation, cleaning out all the garbage, a stance of trust or surrender serves you, serves your kids, and then we'll expand it to others that you talked about.
Yeah, I love that you surrender is trust, that you define it that way. And that was the first time I ever heard it was from you. That's something that I believe you posted or that I saw in a book that you had written somewhere that I read. And I love that. I love that surrender is trust. And I've done it my way and tried to figure it out for so long and read all the books and get the right strategy and get the right technique and get the right way. And one of the things that I found out was by thinking that I didn't have it for so long, it eluded me. And I came to this place where from the people that I spent time with, people like you that I followed, I listened to, and I emulate the power and the things that you share and the way that you, the stance that you have, I've showed up and see the more I think I need to know, the less I know. So just showing up empty and being, I'm here to serve. What is, and really being a conduit and asking, okay, what's the way that I need to go here? What is just showing up? As somebody said something today is, take one step and the universe will give you 1,000. So just step out in without knowing, just step in with one step and the universe is going to give you the 1,000 steps ahead. And not, it's that not having to know that allows the path to be shown. And I've heard you talk a lot about that. And I really appreciate that everything that you do is it's inspiring, and you have been a great influence on me, and I appreciate it. You have just helped me so much, and I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. And I thank you for the acknowledgement. I'd like you to tell me, you talked about clients, business teams and so forth that you help. As a person going into a business, often a business owner will think you're going to give them some magic crap and it's going to fix whatever problems are going on. Yet the description that you've just given is trusting and receiving intuition and guidance. Talk about, because this is a real question when you talk about coaching businesses and the sort of woo-woo-ish idea that we can be guided and all that crap. So talk about how you help a skeptical sort of nuts and bolts business owner who's looking to get clients or reduce expenses or do something in the context of preparing yourself and then being in a place and space to provide what you provide for them.
So when I show up, I show up with a knowing that I can help them. That's where that preparation, I step into any business that I go to. I could go to any business and I could step in with a knowing that I can help them, because the problem that I see is it's always around that the being piece of who are we being. Like, here's an example. Today I talked to someone who they have their part of a business where they create contracts. And when we started talking, their vision was 12 contracts for the year. So as we started talking and I asked them a question, I said, what if you could make 12 contracts in 3 months instead of a year? And they started to look at the possibilities, because once we start the thinking that we have is, oh, well, we can only do this and we can't do that because of all these ideas that we have. And once we start to look in the direction of possibility, people get pointed in the direction of what is really possible. It just, it's self-evident. It's a self-evident thing. Once we get pointed in the direction of what's possible, we start to see, oh, you know what? I could, if I did this, this, and this, I could probably do 24 in 3 months instead of 12 a year. And people start to see, helping them getting pointed in, and that's part of me being pointed in the possibility for them and believing in that. Like, what if you could create 50 in a month? Is that possible? And people start to go, well, yeah, if I did this and this, and then it starts to show up. It's that trust, right? It's that opening to the possibility of what's really possible. What is really possible? And I ask the people out there, what's possible? You think maybe you can only do 12 in a year? What if you could do 12 in a month? Think about it. What if?
So I can't to what if is a fabulous, you know, perspective shift. I can't or it won't to what if. And just asking that question, what do you think? I mean, like, you work with different people and you talk to lots, whether they end up working with you or not. What do you think creates this seemingly impenetrable barrier around us where we think, I can't, it won't, it doesn't? Like, what is that? Where does it come from and what is it made out of?
A simple choice. It's a choice of perspective for me. Is what comes up is, what's it made out of? It's made out of thought. It's made out of language. And that's the other thing, is when I work with people, one of the things that I talk a lot about is the language that we use. Before I prepared for this, my language wasn't, oh, this is, I don't know when I'm going to show up. This is going to be terrible. I don't know what I'm going to say. It's going to be horrible. Kellen's probably going to see a booger hanging out of my nose. My language was not that. My language was, I'm going to show up and serve. I have something to offer that's valuable. I'm going to show up and I'm going to serve. And in the language, the words that we speak, and in the thoughts that we think, it either creates possibility or it creates barrier. So what's it made of? I think it's made of words. I think it's made of language. Either the possibility or the barrier is made of words.
So let's agree with that. Let's just go down that road and say, someone's listening and they hear you say that, and they say, well, I can't just speak gold bars onto my porch.
There
so
you go.
I want gold bars. And I open the door and they're not there. So Kellen and Robert, they're full of crap. So talk more, because I don't disagree with you, but I want you to teach. I want you to unravel some more about this idea of the thoughts and the language we use. How does it create our experience, our life, our reality? Talk more about that.
Well, here's an example. I was with a client the other day, and they said numerous times, "I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want." And then after that, they shared what they wanted. And they said it again. They said what they wanted. They didn't hear themselves say what they wanted because they had told themselves, "I don't know what I want." So when they said what they wanted, they couldn't hear it, which is perfect. There's no judgment around this. We've said these stories for so long, and these words have come out of our mouths for so long that we become, this is what I see, is we become unconscious. And as we start to take on the fun, exciting opportunity to take a look at the words as they're coming out of our mouth, we get to go, "I'm going to try." Well, that's an excuse, but, oh, well, there you go. There's another one. Get that one out. But I have to, and I can't, and I must. And all these things, the absolutes of, I got to do it right now. And it's always this way. And it's never that way. It's sometimes the language. We have so many words coming out of our mouth that aren't, it's like when I work with people, we boil down the language to the gold, get it down to the gold of what is the language that is creating your world, and get that. And can it be that simple? Maybe here's something somebody said, what if it's fun, simple, and easy? What if it's actually fun, simple, and easy? What if that's the truth? Whoa, what would that mean if it was actually fun, simple, and easy? What if you told yourself that about everything in your life, that it's fun, simple, and easy to create whatever I want? What if that was your story? Whoa, what would that mean?
So I love that. And I love the fact that you gave a whole bunch of examples. And so what I'm hearing you say is it's important and valuable for me, for each person to listen carefully to the language that comes out of our mouths and the dialogue inside of our head, because from that we create either binoculars or blinders. Like, we can either see far away or we can't see at all. We can see into the realm of imagination and possibility, or we can't see past the end of our nose. And we don't even know that we're doing that until we start paying attention, like real attention to the language and what we're creating emotionally and physically with that language. Is that what you said?
I love that reiteration of what I said. Yeah, that's exactly. And I think in the beginning, it feels daunting, because what we're creating in our worlds, this was my experience. It was very daunting for me to look around, and I didn't want to take responsibility for that, because it was so, it just felt so heavy. You know, I was like, this can't all be me. This can't be me. And whenever it's on the other end, it's like, yeah, I'm creating my world. Whenever everything's going good, right? It's like, yeah, I'm creating that. Sure. And then when things are going bad, it's like, oh, wait, somebody else is creating that. Somebody else is creating that part. I'm creating the good stuff, but somebody else is creating the bad stuff, right? That, which I don't subscribe to good and bad, but in the way that, look at, like, this is a more valuable experience than this, you know.
I love that. So you described a situation where you use substances to allow yourself to, you know, to numb pain, or to allow yourself access to your inner being and so forth. And today you live in a place where that's not part of your life. You pay attention and access your consciousness, your words, how you create your world and so forth. And nobody falls up that mountain. So talk a little bit about the work, the journey, because one of the things that happens is somebody will read The Secret or some other book, and they'll say, oh, all I have to do is make a vision board or spout out some wishes. And that's not true. So talk a little bit about the journey up the mountain, because you didn't fall there.
Sure. So from 17 was my first, that was, I got on probation and they decided that I needed to go talk to somebody about my problem because I was a menace to society. And somebody said, if you don't manage your life, the state of Pennsylvania will manage it for you. I found that to be true. So they said, go, you need to go talk to somebody to get your problems figured out, which I didn't think I had that much of a problem, but they did at that time. And I was introduced to a world of spiritual principles, which I hadn't had a whole lot of experience with before. And, you know, at that point, it took a long, I was back and forth. I'd been sober for a while, cleaned up on the wagon for a while, and then back off the wagon. Here for a while, back off the wagon. A couple years, I'd do really good. And then I'd say, I got it. I got it now. Finally, I got it. And then I'd go out and realize that I didn't got it and do the same thing. That happened from 17 until 36. And I would say I put together between that time, I put together probably a solid, not consecutive, but piece by piece, I probably put together 10 or 12 years in there of solid time where I was focused on the spiritual principles and living by those to the best of my ability. And then I came into this book by a guy named Stephen Covey called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. My family owns a restaurant business. They've owned it for 50 years. And I was started working there to stage to take over. And I was being the leader manager. And I read this book and I was like, oh my goodness, if you treat your employees like your customers, you're going to get better. They're going to work a lot harder for you. I was like, what is this magic stuff? Right. It was like really simple stuff, but it changed my world. And then I really got excited about personal development. I went to these workshops called Fred Pryor seminars and I loved what they did. They did these seminars and I was like, that's what I want to do. So I didn't know how to do it, but because I never graduated high school. I never went to college. I've been to jail a couple of times. I was like, these people were really successful CEOs. They were people who had run big companies. They were administrators of schools and stuff. And I was like, well, they're probably not going to hire a guy like me because I don't have a degree. So I was like, how am I going to do this? So I started creating workshops for the people at the business. And then I stepped out and said, I want to do something to help. Then I did NLP, hypnotherapy, a couple of different coach trainings. And it took a long time. It took about 6 or 7 years of really studying and doing all the trainings and trying to figure out how I could learn enough to be enough. And then I figured out you can't ever learn enough to be enough. We just have to show up as enough.
That's fabulous. And the effort and energy, like, I don't want someone to hear that and say, oh, okay, I don't need to go learn anything. It was in the process of your effort and learning that you discovered that you already had the ability to use the things that you were learning. So one train of thought is I need to learn all this stuff, then I'll be okay. Another thought is I'm already okay and I still want to learn all this stuff and be able to use it. And our ability to use it is directly related to believing that we can, as opposed to thinking that the stuff is going to make us okay. And so that's fabulous. And like I said, you didn't fall up. You put in the effort. Something happened. You had I call those moments of inspiration and then a follow-up plan, a liberation event. And you started pursuing this. You had a dream, you had an idea, and you went to town on it to create something new. So one of the things I do know about you is you have some really interesting stories. You've told us some already, and it should be really encouraging because you started from what some could consider a very difficult place, yet here you are. Tell me a little bit about the music part, because, you know, I'm a musician and I have a soft spot for that. So tell me, you said you were an heir to a restaurant. What happened to that? What is the music? Talk more about how you have developed yourself to add good to the world in the ways that you described.
Yeah, the restaurant was such a fabulous opportunity for me to step into a leadership role. Just a perfect opportunity for me to see my true value as a leader, that I had that ability. Because for years I said, who's going to want to talk to me? I'm just a little nothing. Nobody's going to listen to me. I'm just a blah, blah, blah. And I thought that I didn't have anything to offer the world. And whenever I took on that role and stepped into that leadership position, I was able to see how that was such a great staging for me to be able to step out and be, and to do what I'm doing now. Such a great start. And when I stepped out, I stepped away from that. I knew that I loved the leadership aspect, but I didn't wake up thinking I want to cook cheeseburgers for a living and be at work 6 days a week, working 80 hours a week. I didn't want to do that. That wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. So when I stepped away, I had no idea how is this going to work? And the way that I knew that I could make money is I played music from the age of 15, played drums and piano, then guitar. And I played a lot. Once I figured out girls like that kind of stuff, I was like, yeah, I'm going to play a lot of guitar. And so that was my driver back then. It was, girls love music, so I'm going to learn how to play. So after I stepped away from the restaurant business, I realized, okay, I know I can make some money playing music. And I was sober and I didn't want to go play at bars because I didn't want to be in that atmosphere. So I was like, okay, well, how can I play music and make money? I was, all right, I'm going to go to nursing homes. I knew I love my grandma loved Patsy Cline and Elvis and Johnny Cash. And I knew some of those songs. So I was like, I'm going to do that. So that's what I started doing to make money. And it wasn't a lot of money, but it was good. And I found that it also helped me to get up in front of an audience and be able to be me and to learn and to learn who I am as a person and how I can interact and really serve people in a powerful way and let go of the story of what does this mean and just show up in service and love and show up and say, I'm here to create a fun, exciting time for these people. And now everywhere I go, it's so fun. Every time I play at a new place, they're like, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? We want you back next week. And we have such a good time. And I love to tell corny jokes and they love corny jokes. So that works really good for me. And so I have a whole load of corny jokes. They love the corny jokes. And it's just such a beautiful thing. And it's just so, it was all inevitable. And I wasn't able to see it until now that this was part of my journey of what was meant for me. And that's something that I want to share out there with everybody is once you step out into the unknown, you're going to find out what's inevitable for you. It's going to show up. It's going to show up in your life. When you step out and you just step out into the unknown and you say, I'm going to do this because it's just, you feel that feeling and you just step out into it without knowing. That's when the magic happens. That's when the miracles start to show up.
You said something really that to me is really important. And so I do say things over because I want people to make sure they heard it. You said, I had the freedom I created by my willingness to go, my desire to do music, my willingness to go in a place that some people might consider not very much fun. Old folks homes, what's that? You chose to look at it like an opportunity to serve, an opportunity to be yourself. In other words, just show up with the idea of service and to have a good time and provide value to those folks. And some people might be afraid of that. And the reaction to you is, when are you coming back? How important is that realization about just being yourself without all the baggage that we carry? Talk a little bit more about that.
That experience of me stepping out. And I want to preface it by saying this, that I, in the beginning, I wanted to make money and that was the only way I knew how. So it wasn't like in the beginning, I was like, I'm going to have to serve these people. I was doing it because I thought if I don't do this, I'm going to starve. I'm not going to have money. And my wife's going to come down on me, which she's my ex-wife now. She's going to come down on me and be like, you're not making enough money. What's going on? So when I started it, I did it from a place of, it was from a place of lack and need. And as I've developed my self and really stepped into that, I've seen how much of a value it is and been able to turn into that. And it's been such a gift for me to be able to do that. And it's such a gift to continue to do that. It has changed my world considerably. It's created me stepping into that in service. And it's a transition from need to abundance, from lack to abundance, and stepping into that has been, and I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but this is where I'm going with it, is it's been such a powerful piece for me to show up and just serve. That's it. Just serve with no, I don't make a lot of money doing that. And I love it. I would do it for nothing. And I do it for nothing for places. If they don't have a budget, I'll go in and do it for nothing, because it's not about the money.
So you did exactly, I mean, it doesn't matter what I had in mind. I had nothing in mind. I just wanted you to talk about it. What I hear from that is I started it for a need. I needed money, it's a place of lack. And the discovery of yourself, the joy that you could bring, is an evolution of that. And the reason I find that so important is sometimes people have the feeling that they got to go to the mountain and get enlightenment, or you know, whatever that means, before they can start something. And you're saying it the other way around. Screw all that. Just start and go do stuff and give in, yes, say yes, and move forward. And whatever reason you start it, it will reveal itself to you in the process if your mind is set on development. And yours was. You had been doing all those other things, and yeah, you needed money, but the universe has a way of taking all those things and turning them to our development and good.
Yeah, and the same thing happened in my coaching. When I started, I did marriage coaching, and my motto was, I gotta find, and I didn't consciously have this motto, but the way I showed up was, whose marriage is terrible enough that they're ready to say yes to me to help them? That was kind of the way that I showed up, is I gotta find somebody desperate enough to buy my services. And, you know, I found people who were, and working with those people was challenging. And some of the people had great results, and some of the people had really terrible results, and they were like, you suck. That was okay. That was part of the journey. And realizing, really, like you said, it was part of the journey of honing that skill that I continue to hone and continue to show up and serve and show up empty and serve in the greatest way possible that I can.
I love that. And I want to just give a public service announcement for everybody listening to this. Go back and listen, because there's so many things that have sort of under the radar come out of Robert. You know, show up empty is one of those. And, you know, that is, do what you can as you listen to your words and everything to subtract neediness and subtract ego out of your approach to things. And so you said that, and I wanted to just emphasize that so everybody realizes when they're listening, each of those kinds of things is really important. You have another story that I happen to be privy to parts of, and that is you have a relationship now that's kind of unusual, and it also involved some degree of surrender and serendipity and intervention from, you know, higher sources and so forth. You want to share a little bit about that? You said my wife would come down on me, and then you said now ex-wife. So clearly you've had a relationship and it didn't work, despite the fact that you were a marriage counselor or doing that. So talk a little more about that and what's going on now. Well, we don't shy away from anything here, so let's get on the road. Sure. Rubber meets the road and see what happened.
This is a beautiful story. And when I was married, my ex-wife and I, we struggled 15 years. We had two children. Our son, he's 22, and he was 5 whenever I met my ex-wife, and we just struggled and struggled and struggled and struggled. And as I got sober and started to live my life in a way of, started to take responsibility for my side of the street, we tried to work things out, just didn't work. So I actually had an experience where I asked, I just was frustrated. I said, oh, what do I need to do here? And the voice said, go now. I was like, okay, I'm going to go. Here I go. That was what the voice said. Go now. We've been struggling for all these years. So I left, and we finally separated and got a divorce. And when I did that, allowed me, that was in December of 2022. And in January of 2023, I was introduced to a book called The Ultimate Coach Book, and Steve Hardison and some other things. And then I got introduced to this group called the Ultimate Coach Facebook group. And when I got into that group, one of the things people were posting was this book called Victor Bach, How to Solve All Your Money Problems Forever. And I had read the book and I started to open up and I started to become open to deeper possibilities in my life. And I started to think, man, what's possible? Maybe I can create way more than I thought. And I started to shift from lack and need and I got to get to, what if I just showed up and just showed up authentically and did my best to serve. And that was my shift, was starting to shift to that showing up open and being ready to serve and who I can serve anybody. And when I did that, I started writing out, one of the things in that book is have statements. So it's like talking about all your desires. What do you desire? Write it all out, speak it, write it on a piece of paper every day. I, Robert Twine, have a brand new BMW. I, Robert Twine, have a 4-bedroom house. And one of the statements was, I, Robert Twine, have a beautiful, amazing, fantastic, compassionate, loving, vivacious woman as my life partner. And I started speaking that out. And I started writing it out, and I did a voice clip of it, and I was listening to it. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, this amazing woman sends me a voice clip, and I wake up to the morning of this voice clip. Emma Edwards sends me this voice clip, like, hi, acknowledging me for my posts and all this. And I thought, wow, that's kind of neat, right? So we got on a video call right away. And we started talking, and we've been talking ever since. And she lives in, and it's been phenomenal. And what I want to speak to with that is becoming open to give and receive. It's one of the biggest things that has come from my experience of reading the Ultimate Coach book, being connected with people like yourself, is becoming open to give and receive. Not just acknowledgments, but also the possibility of what could happen in your life. If you let go of those things, those thoughts, and those things that are holding you back, what could be possible in your life? And it was so amazing that she lives 3,300 miles away in another country across the pond, and she's been here twice, and we're creating amazing things together, amazing things. And it seems, when I look at it, it's like, what if I, 2 years ago, if I would have looked at that, I was like, there's no way. There's no way that would ever happen in my life, that I would ever be creating that. And today, I see that it's inevitable, that it always was inevitable. It was waiting on me to let go of the things that were holding me back for that to come into my life. And that's waiting for the people that are here, too. There's so much that's waiting on us to step into that unknown and to step into just not knowing. We don't need to know. We step out and follow our heart. When we do that, miracles start to show up. It's inevitable. It happens for every single person that does that, that miracles show up in their lives.
So you said a couple of sentences that I found very good and very instructive and powerful. It says, you said, and I'm going to ruin it, and you can fix it if you want, but you said, I couldn't have imagined creating that. And when I let go, so envisioning, I let go of the things that were holding me back. Now, holding me back is a, you know, woo-woo buzzword in the coaching universe. But imagine these chains or these barriers holding you in place, and they're not really bolted to you. You're holding on to them, and you let go. The surrender, the trust, you let go. And the letting go is driven by the idea and the answer to the question, what is actually possible here? And you wrote those, I am, the reflection or the expression of a possibility, which is part one. And part two is then you let go of ideas, words, thought patterns, beliefs that you were holding on to that were holding you away from that possibility. And so that was the continuum of, I can't imagine such a thing. Gee, I express this possibility and I look at it with my eyes open for the first time, take all the dirt off my face, and then I let go of all the things that were holding me down, and we seem to be afraid to do that. Did I express what you just told us?
Yeah, perfectly. Perfectly. And simultaneously, that same thing was happening for Emma. She was right. She wrote out a statement of her twin flame document that she wrote in January. And she was doing the same thing and becoming open. And this is the other thing that I want to share that's really important. I didn't have a need for me to have that outcome. It was just, I was open to the possibility of it happening without an attachment to this. I need this to happen for me to be someone. I need this to happen for me to have an identity that is worth something. I didn't have that. I just was open to the possibility of, actually, whenever I talked to her, the first time, I told her that I didn't want to be in a relationship for a whole nother year because I had only been 7 months separated and getting a divorce from my ex-wife. And I said, I don't want to have a relationship for a year. And then a couple of weeks later, she shared how her feelings for me. And I said, yes, let's do it. Let's see, let's step into this and see what happens. And there's been moments of contraction and fear, and we step into that and we bring it out to the light and we deal with it and we talk about it. And so I want people to hear that is, it wasn't from a place of, if I don't create this, I'm not enough. It was from a place of, well, let's put it down there. That's cool. That would be cool to happen someday. And then 2 weeks later, it's like, well, not that it's going to happen like that for everybody, but that not having no attachment to the outcome was a big part of it showing up so quickly. I want people to hear that is from my experience. I believe that that's true.
So that I love that. And you said several things. Robert Twine, have this, or am this, or create this, and this. And one of them you've talked about, which manifested itself quickly, and the conditions you described for its manifestation as I wasn't attached. It didn't have to happen in order for me to be okay. I didn't need this in order to stamp approved on my forehead. I didn't need any of that. It was just a statement of possibility. And there are others on that list that I imagine haven't all manifested yet.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. That's kind of, yeah, okay, you're coaching me now. Okay, yeah, I get it. Thank you.
Well, but that's your point. No, I'm not
coaching right. Yeah, that. No. I'm seeing from that is there is some attachment to some of those things that are starting to show up, but having as quickly, it's a great, I appreciate you speaking to that because I'm seeing, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that there was some attachment for me to, I felt like I needed to have the money and the cars and the all this stuff to mean who I am. And I love that you're sharing that because, man, that helps me to get so clear. I love that. It's amazing.
Well, and money is the big monster. Yeah, money is the big monster. We all run around with this turd in our punch bowl that says, if I don't have X amount of money, then I stink. If I don't have this evidence of my coolness, then I must not be cool. Yet you eloquently express the lack of attachment and, in fact, a little repulsion. I just got separated. Man, I don't even want to talk about this for a minute because, holy crap, like I've been struggled for 15, blah, blah, blah. I don't even want to do this. And so, but you're open saying that there is this thing out there I'd like to have sometime, not attached to it, and I don't need it right now. And so the interesting thing is a bunch of other stuff that you may have felt like I'm not good enough, I stink unless X, and they're all the same. They're the list of things that you have expressed through your meditation and through your connection with the divine that it makes sense for you to be looking to create in your life. And when we surrender, which is trust, we then amplify our power of attraction. And it was just a contrast of those things. And I didn't know this, but it seemed like some of them weren't true yet. Not that they would all come in 2 weeks, but you gave us that perfect teaching. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to come here and be able to share. It's a fantastic opportunity. I love that you give people this outlet to be able to share and to speak into possibility for other people.
Well, we're not done yet. We've got about 5 or 6 more minutes. So sure. I want to make sure two things. The first thing is I want to make sure you tell all my listeners how to follow Robert Twine, the old folks home, joy bringing musician, guitar strumming, used to be chick magnet thing, who now does it out of love to make a little money, who's a good coach, who's manifesting things not only for himself, but for clients, and teaching eternal principles, like you speak your world into existence. How do people find you? I don't know if you've written a book yet or not, or if you have programs or what. Tell us how to find more about what you do.
So get your I have statements. I have Robert Twine as my coach. Just write that down every day 10 times and then I'll show up at your house. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, shoot. No, Facebook is a great way. Robert Twine at Facebook. Or you can send me an email at shift of perspective, not shit of perspective, shift of perspective at gmail.com. So either Facebook, Robert Twine, or shift of perspective at Gmail. You can send me an email or you can connect with me on Facebook. I am on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn and I'm also on, what's the X now? Is it used to be
Twitter? Used to be Twitter. It's now X.
Okay. X. I'm on that too. And I don't really check those too much. Facebook's really my main. That's my main place that I do stuff. And actually, this is a fun story quickly, is this past year, my Facebook was hacked and I had 4,000 people connections, something like that, 2.5, maybe 3,000. That could be wrong. But all that happened and I was like, wow, this is going to be fun. And I was like, I've grown a lot. There would have been a time where I would have felt like I lost my Facebook. And whenever that was an opportunity for me to start over. And I felt really good about it. And so I want to share that with people here. If you do your business strictly on Facebook, something to think about is to create it offline as much as you can. That way you don't need that to run your business, because that can happen.
On any individual thing, because right. You don't own the platforms and all kinds of crap can happen. So Robert's lesson is for all of us. Thank you for that. And I would encourage listeners to look his stuff up. You know, he's a genuine down-to-earth guy, started with a, you know, family had a restaurant, 17, this and that problem, and now has described in detail the hike up the mountain as far as he is, because this whole thing, our whole life is a mountain without a top, and now lives in a place that you've seen. Like, I've talked to him before. This is genuine. This is Robert. He goes out to serve and to love and to do, add good to the world in his unique way. We've got a couple of minutes left, and so I'd like you to think, there's going to be people who hear this that think, yeah, that's all good for him, and the stories are pretty cool, but, and then, you know, fill in the language, but, or, well, and one of the things I say is anytime you hear the word, well, you can ignore everything that comes after that because it's all garbage anyway. So what would you leave listeners with? What thoughts, encouragement, assurances would you leave here with?
So I'd leave leave you with a question to answer is, what is it that you really want in your life? And then the second part of that question is, how are you keeping it out? Yeah, that's good for you, but not for me. That's something to look at, as possibly that's part of what's keeping that out of your life. And you can choose to create what you want. And there's lots of people out there that I know, if anybody out there connected with Kellen, you would have a conversation with them. If anybody reached out to me, I would have a conversation with you. So why aren't you doing that? What's holding you back from that? Because you could do that. You could send me a message. I would have a conversation with you. Could be the most valuable conversation in your life. You could send Callan a message. I'm sure you would have a conversation, and it could be the most valuable thing. So why are you not doing that? What's holding you back from that? Because you can say yes to that. There's a lot of people out there that are here to help when you're ready. And if you're not ready now, that's okay. When you are ready, reach out to somebody that you see is creating powerfully in their life and ask them how they're doing it, and do that. Do it how it works for you. So that would be my invitation.
I love that, and thank you. And I would encourage you listeners to do that thing. It's easy to say, well, later. It's easy to say, well, they probably don't mean it. It's easy to say, well, they'll just probably try to sell me something or whatever. That isn't what it's about. You heard Robert say he goes and does performances for people that can't possibly pay him in old folks' homes. And he does it out of love to see the joy and the smiles on their face. Robert, I want to thank you for sharing your heart, your story, and your smile and everything about you with us today.
Thanks, Kellen. Appreciate you.
You are absolutely welcome. I want to invite you guys, every one of you, to listen again. Just go through this and ask that question. What are you doing to keep this success, this joy, this development, this opportunity out of your life? Because it's your birthright. It's your opportunity. But it isn't going to create itself. Your language, your words, your thoughts, your feelings, you create your reality. So let's create something good. Reach out to Robert and move forward to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.